Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
They are the Nonprofits. There's a Dennis Lube, a Russell Glasser, and a Jeff D., and they're coming to you live from a free thought library in an Austin, Texas, on the 20th of September, 2017. That show is sponsored by an atheist community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of a positive atheism and the separation of a church and a state. If you want to learn more about an ACA, you can call a voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit a website at www.atheist-community.org. Those nonprofits broadcast live on the first and third Wednesdays of months when it's 7:30 to a 9 central time. You can join that nonprofit's chat room by following those directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So sit back to enjoy a show.
Thank you, Dennis.
That appears to be the refusal to use definite articles.
Yes. Yes, my intros are getting more and more weird.
Very avant-garde.
I have to reach further and further for something.
So you're going to, at some point, you're going to have to just like translate into it different languages.
I could probably, yeah. Do this in French. It would be awesome.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Atheist Experience. And how's everybody doing?
I'm doing fine.
Just fine.
Our readers can't, our listeners can't respond, of course, but we're doing great.
They can sound off into the ether or chat in the chat room if they feel so.
If they're
so
tuned in live to the YouTube channel, and especially if they've liked and subscribed to that YouTube channel, then they can also comment live during the show.
You may
not have known that.
They can comment live in a YouTube channel.
It's a better YouTube channel comment section than many. And also, it doesn't say, it's actually just a chat room. It doesn't stick around. It doesn't persist on the video after the fact.
You can pretend that we can hear you, but we're just ignoring what you say. You can do that.
I sometimes check and say a thing.
Well, we got a lot of feedback on the discussion in a recent episode, maybe last week, I can never remember, on the theism in role playing games.
Yes.
Oh, thing. Well,
we got not only
we done that two weeks in a row.
We maybe have, and I've just lost half
Which
of
is
my
fine.
Microphone.
Yeah, me too. I think it's all of
Uh-oh.
Us.
Yeah, that's
oh.
back.
Oh, okay.
I was pleasantly surprised that these three letters on that subject actually bring up three entirely separate kind of new angles.
Ooh, nice.
So let's start it.
One of them scolds us, but...
Not on this.
Okay.
Well, the scolding comes when people get sick of it, Dennis.
Ah, okay.
That hasn't begun yet.
Ah.
At least not, we haven't heard from anyone that's sick of it.
If you'd like to say that you're sick of it, please email us.
So we get sort of a warning at the beginning of this letter. Adrian says, sorry if you are tired of this topic. That's a red flag. Maybe that's enough. But I had an objection to what you said about classical D&D and atheists.
Oh, no.
Since classical D&D settings have magic, isn't there room for a very rational atheist to claim that the God's existence hasn't been demonstrated as all the miracles that people say that they perform and that the priests do could be a form of magic similar to that of wizards?
Right.
Now, I kind of touched on this, right? I talked about the Tekemel setting and how there's sort of there's the hooks there for that interpretation in that setting where, yeah, they've seen appearances by the gods, but those appearances are things that can easily be duplicated with the spells that they have. So it's hard to say. But let me go on with Adrian. Wouldn't it be reasonable to claim that the method by which priests heal is the same as the one sorcerers use to cast fireballs, even though they don't realize it? After all, magic being as real there as science is for us, it could explain most, if not all, miracles. Therefore, isn't it a bit more parsimonious explanation? Well, you did make the mistake of saying classical D&D, which I will interpret to mean original D&D. Which is very vague about a lot of the specifics about how these things work.
I believe classical D&D came right after the Baroque D&D period.
That's right.
So that's certainly an interpretation. If the way that magic works in your particular campaign, right? If within your classical D&D you have interpreted things to work similarly, obviously, like at the very basic level, as opposed to expert or advanced, the characters, magic users and clerics both acquire spells according to similar systems. But right away you have individual GMs making rulings like, in my game, you have to have your spell book. This is a very common one and might even be in original D&D. If you're a magic user, you have to have a spell book and like study your spell book every morning to pick up your spells.
Ugh.
But then it's a lot less specific about how clerics get theirs.
Right.
And in more recent iterations of D&D, I think these loopholes and vague open questions get more closed. But the more they get closed, the more you've got distinctly different mechanisms for handing out the magic spells.
Yeah.
Right. The magic user spells versus the cleric spells.
Right. Yeah. Now in classic D&D, I know that wizards could only cast. They'd create a clip of spells and they'd fire them off and then they couldn't
do anymore. Right?
Did clerics operate the same way?
I think nominally yes, but again, you got to remember original D&D was very loosey goosey and non-specific about a lot of things. So
yeah, but of course the details and technical aspects of this are kind of irrelevant.
Here's the thing.
Really proving a god is like
the reason,
if magic can do it, then
original D&D, I'd have to say no, because if it were the same kind of thing they were both doing, then magic users ought to be able to learn cleric spells and vice versa.
Well, he's not saying it's exactly the same. It may not be exactly the same system, but two different forms of magic, they still obviate the necessity for a god.
Non-believers ought to be able to cast cleric spells. And it's not clear in original D&D whether that even matters,
and if
right?
They can't, obviously, but if it did, that means that those guys are special, like wizards or something.
Right. Yeah. So bottom line is, wow, it really depends on how all these differences are defined. And I think at a certain point, you may the specifics of how those two classes operate could be enough that you'd say, no, these guys are doing something that's different from those
and,
other guys.
If I find myself dropped into the middle of a random world with unfamiliar rules, I'm not necessarily going to try to come up with logical explanations that avoid the God hypothesis at all costs, right? I mean, like, if I find myself in a world where, I don't know, guys like Schmendrick the magician go around casting accidental spells, turning unicorns into people.
Right.
I'm going to react a different way than if I get dropped in the middle of, let's say, Disney's Hercules, where there do appear to be big guys throwing thunderbolts, and that changes the evaluation of what's going on a little bit.
There are things in D&D that don't – in classical D&D, isn't there summoning?
Yeah.
You summon demons, sure. You summon stuff like that?
Well,
that might it depends, suggest.
It depends. He says classical D&D, which is not a technical term, right? If he means original D&D, no.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I might not be 100% accurate on that. I don't remember my original D&D spell canon. There might, in fact, have been a summoning. But it gets really specific with later books.
Right.
And here's the other thing. If by classical D&D we are including advanced D&D that had the Deities and Demigods book, then forget it. Because they have said, yes, the gods exist and here are their stats.
Right.
Then you really can't then claim that it's that they're a magical projection.
Right. But if they have stats, what's the difference between a god and just some guy with a
very big monster?
Really big stats.
Good question. And we will get into that in a later letter. Thank you very much, Adrian.
Okay.
Are you ready, Russell, to do a news?
So it seems the world is ending. So, nothing to see here.
Yeah,
folks.
When's it due?
This weekend, Saturday, I believe, which, by the way, coincides with the annual ACA Bat Cruise. Are you guys going?
Oh, well, I should.
Before the world ends, last hurrah.
Yeah, that would be nice. And we'll get another episode of Orville, so yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, tickets are still available via atheist-community.org. Uh-huh. And if you show up in the afternoon, check the website for details. We are going to the usual place for a pre-cruise lecture where our guest speaker will be Mohammed Saeed. I got to learn this by Saturday.
Right.
Introducing him.
Oops.
President of Ex-Muslims of North America.
Ah.
But after that, presumably, hopefully after, the world is going to end. This was mentioned dismissively in a number of places, but what I love about this story on foxnews.com is that it's so completely credulous.
Right.
The headline is, Biblical prophecy claims the world will end on September 23rd, Christian numerologists claim.
Wait, Christian numerologists claim that biblical scholars claim. They're stacking claims on top of claims.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not that different from the way Fox News usually cites things,
right.
Which is some people are saying Gambit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, but if Fox goes, when Fox goes, some people are saying that some other people are saying, then they've really pushed their responsibility for accuracy off as far as they can.
Yep. A Christian numerologist claims that the world will end next Saturday when a planet will supposedly collide with Earth.
Is this Nibiru?
That's a very specific thing. I mean, you would planets are visible from a long way off.
Yeah, and they don't just sneak up from off stage.
And if I remember my lessons from Douglas Adams correctly, space is big. Really big.
Mm-hmm. Do they say what – I don't know. I'm asking questions now before you've gotten through it. But I'm curious to know whether they cite a specific time because we know what the closest planet is to the Earth. I couldn't tell you which one it is at this moment.
Right.
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 But knowing which is the closest planet, we could figure out at the speed of light how long it would take that planet to get here. So some number of minutes or hours or whatever prior to the moment it's supposed to happen, we can go, it's not going to happen.
Well, we can see things that are light years away. Well, maybe not planets.
Right. No.
But
actually, we have
if it's ending on Saturday, then that planet must be at most.
Is it Saturn?
Three light days away.
Because I can see Saturn being pissed off since we just crashed a robot into it.
you humans, come collide with you.
Right.
See how you like it.
Although most things do not travel at the speed of light, planets are heavy and they take a while to get momentum going.
Them like that. Yeah.
Well.
Is it Nibiru?
All I'm saying is it can only go, it can't go any faster than the speed of light, which gives us a little window.
Yeah. No, I don't see a specific time in
also,
this
speaking
story.
Of the gods, Saturn is, of course, the Roman version of Zeus. So.
Hmm.
Does it name the planet?
So that must mean something that I'm not prepared to say what that might imply. What, Dennis?
Because I've heard rumors it was Nibiru.
Well, which one is Nibiru?
Oh, mysterious planet that's going to collide with us.
What?
Nibiru.
Who named it?
I have no idea. But it's a thing.
Okay.
You can look it up. N-I-B-I. All right.
Not only is there not a specific time, but his original quotation was, "It is very strange indeed that both the great sign of Revelation 12 and the Great Pyramid of Giza both point us to one precise moment in time, September 20th to 23rd,
The Great Pyramid of Giza, of course, famously built by Christian astronomers.
Right. No, space aliens.
It's amazing.
No. But it's a Christian prophecy, see, so they have to. Yeah. They can't be admitting that their prophecy is based on some non-Christian thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
It's amazing we can cook the numbers to that degree. Yeah. Yeah, yes. It is. It is amazing.
So not that specific, but pretty darn specific when it comes to cosmological events.
So that's Saturday.
3 days.
Saturday?
Within, it is now the 20th, and he said between the 20th and the 23rd.
Oh.
So anytime now.
Oh, is he willing to give up all his earthly possessions?
That's an awfully big window he's giving himself.
Yeah. Even with that awfully big window, I don't think this prediction is vague enough.
I don't think so either. Yeah. But
to manage to retroactively, like, is he going to say that the planet spiritually crashed into the Earth? Is that what the story is?
Oh boy, we're going to go there too in the D&D discussions.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure we are.
All right. Yeah, so he doesn't actually specify the planet or the time or the day or anything. He just gives himself a big 3-day long window.
I don't know if he did or not. I just know that that this particular Fox News story doesn't mention it. Luke 21:25-26 are the verses that he cited, and I guess I'll break my usual rule about not reading any Bible verses because we'll fall asleep. But
make it a short one.
There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars on the earth. Nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Well, that doesn't point to a year.
Yeah.
Let alone a couple of days.
Yeah.
Although.
Right. So do we have a name for this?
There is roaring and tossing of the sea these days, so.
I got about this. It says, Nibiru conspiracy theorists believe Planet X is due to smash into Earth on September 23rd, destroying all life and signaling the end of the world. I think that would be more than signaling. I think it would actually physically be destroying the world.
Oh, shit. We've been crashed into by another planet. Everybody look out. The world's about to end.
It's a sign.
Now we're really in trouble. Yeah.
God, if you're angry at the world, send us a sign.
Kaboom.
Anything at all. Anytime now.
Wow. And that was from a The Express, I think, in London. Yeah.
Yeah. Sun.co.uk also
Nibiru.
Has it. Just all the, I mean, somehow The liberal media is suppressing it again because of the sites that I normally read are mentioning this end of the world thing at all.
Well, the liberal media, never wants to give God credit for anything.
Exactly. So. They'll probably just say it was some kind of natural phenomenon when Planet X crashes into the Earth.
Isn't it some sort of just natural cycle?
Yeah.
That's right.
We get crashed into. We don't get crashed into. We get crashed into.
You guys, these planet crashing into the Earth graphs are off the charts. Oh, you're just anti-business.
It's a 100-year planet collision that we've experienced.
You know, 1,000 years ago, there was an anti-planet crashing into the Earth. Yeah. So this science stuff is all just guesses.
That's right.
All right. Back to Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
Right. Rule from the Netherlands writes, I was just listening to your follow-up on the D&D and Atheists, the 7th September 2017 episode, and how unrealistic it seemed to you all. I think it depends on definitions a bit, like always. Though you have discussed some of this already, you really did get me excited about this. Lots and lots of people would define a god as a being that created stuff, preferably the universe itself.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Some would even say a god is good by definition because they also must have created morality. Yet, we still call Poseidon a god. What is the point when a demon or... Okay, so first let me pause on the Poseidon thing. Mm-hmm. I think the fact of what different religions break this down different ways, right?
Yeah.
Like the Romans were quite content to have human beings redefined as gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had their own definition of how that worked. Because when Julius Caesar, they say ascended to heaven because he became a god.
Yeah.
They're not retroactively saying, oh yeah, and he's one of the guys that helped create the earth. The thing with Poseidon in Greek mythology is gods are a race. Titans are a race. Gods are a race. Mm-hmm. They're all different breeds of being. And so in that, I think, if I remember my Greek mythology properly, it was some pre-Titan entities that either represented or caused the creation of the world. And the Titans and the gods were offspring of
later.
Those things. So, it does come down to definitions, and so we'll see what good that does you in the rest of your letter. What is the point when a demon or a wizard could be called a god? All right, so he's leaping from Poseidon, didn't create the universe, but has magical powers.
Right.
Is a god to a demon or wizard. Well, in Greek mythology, a demon or wizard, if they're not of that strain of beings that is specifically called the gods, is not a god.
Right.
And, as that relates to later Roman take on their religion, they would always try to come up with a lineage for the person that they're calling a god to say that he is, in fact, descended from a god.
Right.
So that he could be part of that race. Right? Okay. So it just demonstrating magical powers doesn't necessarily help, at least not in that in the Greek mythology milieu. Not to mention the Greek titans, elder gods, etc. Well, yeah, Lovecraft with his elder gods, though, didn't ever say that the elder gods created the universe.
They were just going to eat it.
They were just ancient, mighty things that fucked with stuff, right?
Yeah. And like they once ruled the earth, and they will again.
And they'd eat your face. And so in that case, it's much the elder gods are much more in the same camp as a totem pole on a South Seas island, right? They're a thing that is called – it is worshipped by people, and because they worship the thing,
right,
we call that their god.
Yeah.
So by that definition, it's anything that gets worshipped. So you don't even have to have magical spells in certain definitions of the term.
Right.
You don't have to have any magical powers at all. If you get worshipped, then bang. What if humans can do magic, but an extraterrestrial species can – can do magic much more proficiently? What if this magic is like a force of nature or a resource that gods can just draw much quicker in much greater quantity and quality for a longer duration? Couldn't the word god in practice, though not connotation, just become something like professors with a double PhD, angel and demon-like creatures with are like TAs with a BSc, human you're losing me here with all this college terminology. Yeah, I get the point.
A hierarchy.
We get the point. Yeah, there's definitions. So that's going to – what counts as a god in a particular D&D campaign is going to depend on the setup of that specific setting according to that specific GM. Okay. To be an atheist in such a context where he's saying if it's just about having magical powers and anybody can learn it.
Right.
So if you've got enough experience at magic, then you got a lot of magical powers, so you're a god, right? To be an atheist in such a context would mean a whole lot of different things. Then there is, of course, that point of Jeff's universe where the priests do rituals and spells which summon the divine, ghostly, looming specters. There are no gods, just human spells. Now, but let me be clear. First, it's not my setting. It's the Tecumel set, right. Setting by Professor M.A.R. Barker. And I'm not saying that the fact that the priests in that world have spells that can project giant illusions proves that the gods are fake. I'm saying Professor Barker in his setting really liked to leave a lot of hooks in for whatever interpretation you wanted to make. So there could totally be a completely legitimate Tecumel campaign where there aren't any gods, where it's all just a fake thing. So okay. This touched on something that somebody asked about whether just having a lot of power is enough to be make you a god, or whether it has to do with having created things.
Definitions for god are
It depends on the religion, and then if you're gonna make it have that question come up in your D&D campaign, it depends on how your campaign works.
Yeah, I imagine having to explain gods to Christians might be awkward, but yeah.
In my case, when I approached that, I looked at deities and demigods and said, well, supposedly all these things exist at once. There's no way that they all could have created the world.
Right.
That the earth could have been created according to all of their different mythological histories. So it's none of them.
Right.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Rule. I think my voice is going in and I got to face my microphone a little better. Okay, Russell, do you have any more news?
Yeah.
You must, right? Because you've only done one so far.
Can I mention one thing, though?
Sure.
About the previous news?
Yes.
Report. What's going to happen when that planet hits the flat Earth?
Well, it depends. If it hits it edge on, we could actually cut that planet
slice
in
half.
Or if it just clips the edge, it could send the flat Earth like spinning like a giant wafer through space.
That's true. If it hits it dead
I don't
center,
think flat Earthers believe
the flat
a space.
Earth could wrap around.
It could poke a hole.
Planet.
It could become like a giant LP shaped planet.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm not clear on the metaphysics of flat Earth belief, but I mean, think maybe
no
you're
is.
Thinking of Discworld, which is maybe different from
no,
the other planets.
No, it's the recent flat Earth
mania
that's
do they believe that the Earth is a plate floating in space? I mean, I don't think that that's what flat Earth belief
I don't think
entails.
They thought of it, but yeah, they apparently
there are probably multiple.
Do they maybe think that the Earth is an infinite plane and there is no space?
Do they think that the other planets are flat too? Because then the collision could just be like a two flat things. Is make like a planet sandwich.
Is the moon just a billboard? I mean,
I guess
it
would be a humanity sandwich between two different flat worlds.
Yeah. Or, but if it's a round planet and it hits us from below, we could wrap around it And we have a spherical Earth. Sphere.
Wow, that's really clever.
And we're a burrito.
That's right.
Are we going to get into the philosophical argument about what constitutes a sandwich? Is it really a sandwich if it's Earth and people? But
but anyway,
yes.
On to other
continue.
Things.
Yes.
This was brought to my attention recently by Prof on Twitter, as always, tweeting with the hashtag Nonprofits News. Thank you very much. This was initially a link to Hemant Mehta, the Friendly Atheist blog, who contextualized this story a little bit by pointing out that Wheaton College, which is a Christian college, a very Christian college, in Illinois, has this code of conduct, or calling it? A community covenant, which says a lot of things about things they don't want you to do.
Of course.
So, for example, upholding chastity among the unmarried, Bible link. And sexual immorality, the use of pornography. They mentioned that they don't want anyone on campus to use alcohol or tobacco in addition to illegal drugs. This thing is kind of long-winded, not interesting enough for a shit apologist to say. They'll probably expel you for some of these things.
Sure.
But if you're an athlete...
Oh,
they take their sweet time about responding to things that you may have done. In particular, according to the Chicago Tribune, 5 Wheaton College football players are facing felony charges in a hazing incident. They were accused of a 2016 hazing incident in which a freshman teammate was restrained with duct tape, beaten, left half naked with 2 torn shoulders on a baseball field.
Torn shoulders?
Yeah.
Torn some muscles.
Torn
some
shoulder muscles?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's what it says here.
Man. That's some serious freaking hazing.
Yeah. Last Monday afternoon, a DuPage County judge signed arrest warrants and set $50,000 bonds against the players who have names.
Well, then they're
here.
Off the team. If they're in jail and unable to fulfill their obligations to the team, then they're I'm sure they kicked him out then.
Well, they're probably going to have a hard time showing up for the team if they're in jail. But again, this happened a year ago.
Right.
And until this point, they don't seem to have been expelled.
Oh.
Prosecutors charged the athletes with aggravated battery, mob action, and unlawful restraint. 3 of the accused players – now, their names are listed here, but in keeping with the policy of the show, their names are Binky, 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 and Binky.
Right.
Three of the accused played in Wheaton's college victory over Carthage College on Saturday, and all were listed on the team's roster as of Monday afternoon. The victim, who the Tribune is not naming, left the conservative Christian school shortly after the incident and now attends college in Indiana. The link I had said also that they had sodomized him or something.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. So it mentioned that. I'm not seeing that detail in the linked story, but... There's apparently not every detail in this story. At one point, the players suggested to the freshman that he had been kidnapped by Muslims who wanted to fornicate with goats, the teen told investigators, because Christian college football players are well known for their witty sense of humor.
Yeah.
They patted his foot and suggested he would be their goat for the evening. And then they stuck things up his butt.
Right.
So that's bad.
Yeah. That's where hazing turns into assault. Kind of way early on in the proceedings.
Okay.
But I'm sure they have Bible quotes to support everything they did.
So, tip, maybe don't go to Christian colleges because they ban you from doing stuff that's fun and legal, and they look the other way when you get assaulted.
Right.
Gross. I don't know how to recover from that.
So, I hope the next email is really entertaining then.
Oh, it's pretty good. Tim says.
And we're recovered.
Right. Your discussion about – yeah, that was an excellent segue boost. Your discussion about atheist player characters in D&D got me thinking, would you ever run a campaign set in a world where you as GM decided that gods don't exist or have no real effect in the game world, but don't tell any of your player characters? So if any of them roll up religious character classes, their magic either has no effect or its effect is completely abstracted. Examples. DM. The Goblin's blade slashes Teslan the Protector's neck. He is bleeding profusely. Cleric. I cast Cure Heavy Wounds. Rolls his dice. DM. His spiritual wounds are healed. He bleeds out and dies, but is prepared now to go to meet his maker.
Yeah. No.
Cleric. Oh, crap. Then I cast Resurrect Dead. GM. His spirit is resurrected. He shall live on eternally in heaven. Paladin. I cast Holy Smite on the goblin. Rolls dice. Game Master, you cast Holy Smite. For the next 10 turns, anything bad that happens to the goblin can arguably be attributed to that spell.
That's right.
To get back to your question, Tim, no, I would never do that because I care about all my players having equally good time. And even though D&D is not a paragon of balance between player character types, nominally each of the characters' types is supposed to be useful. And I wouldn't make them not useful. Because that would just be sticking it to those players without letting them know. Now, I might do it and tell them in advance. That's what's going to happen if you pick a cleric or a paladin, right? I might do that, but then I don't think they would play them.
You don't like screwing with your characters by...
not in that way. Not in that way. No. So... And thank you, Tim. Should we mix it up here? Maybe Dennis has a question.
I do.
Maybe.
What's your question?
I have a question. Well, let's see. I have a question. Was getting into heaven impossible before the Jesus deal or merely really hard?
Wow. Is this not one of those things that's the answer is going to vary depending on denomination?
It might be.
Isn't it always?
I don't know. Yeah, it always is. Yeah.
Oh, sure. But there's somewhere really, really, really like that's fundamentally one of the differences between the different denominations.
Yeah, like as I recall, since we've been doing this show, at some point early in the show's run, the Catholic Church came out and decided there was no purgatory. Remember that?
Right. Yeah.
And it was like, okay, apparently there was a purgatory before or whatever, but we all thought there was.
We
all know better now for some reason because new evidence came to light.
I guess.
When the God and his minions closed purgatory, did they... I mean, is it still there? Has it got like a barbed wire fence around it and like warning signs keep out?
Condemned.
Is it one of those things where if you got a camera in there, you could take photos of all the crappy old buildings that are overgrown with weeds and
the
stuff,
really like bad rides and everything? Yeah.
Like you see from some of these Christian theme parks that have closed?
Yeah.
Is it like that? Or has it been like, you know, atomized and distributed throughout the universe or turned into did they annex it and just make more space for heaven proper?
I could swear. Now, I've read Dante's Inferno like a couple of times for classes at different levels, and this was a long time ago, but I could swear that the outermost level of like the outermost circle of hell,
right,
was like the virtuous pagans or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like people like Socrates who are basically cool people, but they weren't around for Jesus. So they basically hang around on the other side of the river, not like killing time, not really in hell, but just kicking around, chatting with each other.
Yeah.
I'm right there, aren't I? I got to look this up.
Yeah, but the thing is, Dante is not necessarily...
He's not a religious figure
or authority.
Yeah, but a lot of things that we think about the afterlife kind of come through a filter of him and John Milton and other people like that.
Yeah. So how is it possible to get in? So the thing is, right, so this thing with Jesus is because of him, your sin is forgiven.
Right.
So... there's a number of different ways this could have played out, right?
Yeah.
One is it's retroactive.
Right, right.
Which it's hard to see how anything would not be retroactive when it comes to the God who's supposed to be outside of time.
Right.
Right. So whose standard is he holding people to
retroactive in what way?
Well, that would mean that everybody who was not in heaven before but deserved to be there would then get to go. So they've been hanging around in whatever place souls went to before Jesus, and then as of Jesus' sacrifice, then they all get to go. It's like they're packing their bags and tromping from where I don't have the map of heaven down straight in my head, but they tromp through. Whatever. But maybe they take a shortcut through purgatory.
then why did the God create heaven? I assume the God created heaven.
Yeah.
Why did he create it in the first place with all that room?
Okay. A, maybe he didn't, right?
Yeah.
You don't know that the room was all there. Or B, maybe he did, but you know, he's outside of time, and so he knew all along.
Right, right. That was going to happen. But if it's outside of time, then the people didn't have to eat the apple. Well, never mind.
If he was outside of time, then again, it seems weird for him to be imposing temporal punishments on, or not temporal punishments. I don't mean like how long you stay there, but I mean for him to judge the people before Jesus differently when he's outside of time. And as far as he's concerned, it's like, okay, there's a solid state of everything. And somewhere in there, there's that point. That's Jesus. And either Jesus exists somewhere in time, therefore everybody's covered, or Jesus doesn't exist somewhere in time and everybody's screwed. Yeah.
Maybe Jesus projects himself as a hologram to people.
All periods.
Yeah.
Like temporal hologram.
He's like, hey, you seem pretty good. Are you going to accept me now that you're about to die?
Help me, Jesus. You're our only hope.
Visit all the people in hell?
Not in hell. I mean, the God is omniscient and knows who has a shot.
The people in hell didn't have a chance to...
But that raises the other question.
Well, I mean, some people are predestinationists.
Things that would get you into hell can be just made to go away if you accept Jesus.
Yeah.
So why don't they?
But not once you're dead.
Right.
But then this whole retroactive thing is bullshit.
Look, the main hope you have is that some Mormon will find your grave and posthumously convert you, and then all of a sudden everything's fine.
Great.
Yeah. And you got to be careful about even raising the question of people who died before Jesus, because there's a lot of Christians do not want to acknowledge that there even was anything.
That's right? True.
That there even was history before him.
Well, I mean, they believe the whole Old Testament. They believe there is a division. So, I mean, what do they think about Noah?
Yeah, but how long do they think that really was? I mean, these are folks who are quite content to deny to like insist that there were no written languages before the one the Bible was written in.
Oh boy, right?
That the Bible is the oldest book. Well, yeah, there's Christians,
and they'll just deny the cultures that existed during the purported worldwide flood.
Right, that's sure, just, sure. That must be archaeological error.
Even young earthers believe the earth is 6,000 years old, and if I do my math right, Jesus was born 2017 years ago.
Yeah.
So, all right. Like, two-thirds of history has people who lived pre-Jesus, and presumably some of the role models in the Bible were technically worthy of going to heaven, maybe.
But the question they really don't like is, what about, you know, that very first person, right? If it's Adam and Eve, right, does their punishment is they were expelled from Eden.
Right.
Yes.
I don't recall in that story that there was a further punishment of their souls were going to be tormented forever or anything.
Yeah. Did they
die? That was their, and then there's the question, where did you go before Jesus? Did he go to a place like hell? Was hell – and then at what point does Satan take over hell and start running it as like, you know, a gulag for guys God doesn't like?
Right. I don't
I did find this article on Wikipedia about virtuous pagans. In fact, I'm really impressed that I got the name exactly right.
I'm glad that you're so impressed with yourself.
Yes,
Russell.
I am. And it's a concept let's see. So prominent examples are Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Cicero, Trajan, and Virgil. Dante places a number of virtuous pagans in the first circle of hell, including Homer, Horace, Ovid, and Lucan, and notably also Saladin, a Muslim. I don't know, what is this first circle like?
Well, that's Homer. Not Homer. It's
Virgil.
What? No.
Dante
again.
Yeah.
I'll just throw out that at this moment, a great thing to read for you science fiction and fantasy fans out there is To Reign in Hell by Stephen Brust.
Good one.
Which is like a fictionalized story of the fallout between God and Satan. And he this author comes up with this whole like fake divine physics kind of thing, where they get their power from and how they control it and stuff. And now, you know, how the bits of the universe get created and divided and stuff. It's an awesome
really
read.
Good book.
Yeah. But that he's no more of an authority than Dante.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that's always bugged me about Christian morality in general is the binariness of the whole thing. Sure, there's accepting Jesus and not accepting Jesus, although if you think that there's a certain cutoff of morality that you have to have in order to get into heaven, which I know a lot of Christians don't. But if you believe that, then a guy who's like right below the cutoff is going to be tortured forever. Uh-huh. And a guy who is like, you know, has done one more, like helped one more old lady cross the street
one less time.
Yeah. And is going to be, you know, singing with the angels.
That's a works-based interpretation, and then there's just the faith-based interpretation, and then that one, the guy who has his moment of doubt on his deathbed fries forever.
Right. Fries forever, yeah.
And the guy who never believed any of it and only cynically on his deathbed declares his allegiance or abandons his rational faculties and just says, okay, sure, I'll believe it.
Even in those situations.
He gets to be in heaven.
Even in those situations, there's a lot of binary decisions about vague cutoffs. What about a guy who is like 5 minutes away from being persuaded?
Razor-thin threshold.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous that this moment of vague almost there-ness results in plus infinity or minus infinity, and that's it.
Right.
I saw, speaking of infinity, I saw an interesting article saying that mathematicians have proved that infinities are of equal size.
Eh, that's not what I've heard.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like,
according to this article, which I could not understand the math, so
of course.
Pardon me.
Yeah.
Okay.
According to this article, there was some proof that all the things we call infinity have to be of equal size.
So
interesting.
People who are learning about infinity, I mean, you know, go through a few stages, like, you know, teenagers who are getting into this
sure.
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's about first, where I'm at.
I don't mean you. I think you're very sophisticated.
Eh.
But like, there's this moment of weirdness when you realize that like twice as many as infinity is still infinity. But then there's also this reversed moment of weirdness when you first hear that the set of all real numbers, you know, the set of decimal numbers is a higher order of infinity, or at least that's what I always heard,
right.
than the set of all integers.
Uh-huh.
And you're saying that's not true now?
That is what I read. But the thing is, I don't understand the math. Maybe what they meant was all things at the same order of infinity are equal.
That could be it.
Maybe that's
could
it.
Could be.
It was apparently some open question.
No,
in math.
Interesting.
All righty.
I just want to say before you go back to something else.
Uh-huh. There's no more DNA.
I hate to be. well then, forget it. hate to be a broken record evangelist, but we've all seen The Good Place now and are talking it up. And apparently the premiere is like right after this show ends.
So yeah, if you get broadcast TV, which or cable, which I don't.
Yeah, but it'll be on the internet soon after that.
You think so? Okay.
Don't watch the first episode of season two if you haven't finished season one, because there's stuff you
yes.
Oh, yeah. There's a big reveal near the end of season one.
Yeah. Just watch. The first season's on Netflix now.
It's great.
You have no excuse.
And it's called The,
The Good Place.
The Good Place.
Is it still called that? I guess they haven't
as far
changed
as I know.
They haven't changed the name of the show.
It's got 90% on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is awesome.
Okay. Switching gears here, Jacob writes, I recently spoke to a very bright young man, gay agnostic. Although he is agnostic, he believes there is something out there due to several experiences he had when he was younger. He claims to have felt like Jesus was giving him a hug, that he felt his grandparents' spirits sitting with him in church, that they appeared before him in their house, and that the God spoke to him personally. Now, this person has a neurological disability. I don't know what disability, he didn't say. I almost feel that the neurological disability could be responsible for these visions, but it feels utterly disgusting to say such a thing to him.
Wow, I don't think you need a neurological disability to experience that kind of crap.
There's, I think it's well documented that a certain percentage of the people of human beings who would not be who are not traditionally classified as people with a mental disability do experience sensations like that
they can't explain.
And not all of them become theists,
right?
I should say. So it's not necessary for what this unidentified neurological disability that this young man has to be the explanation for that. It could be this other thing that a lot of people experience that that is some that is
yeah. I mean, you could
else.
Leave that. You could leave that whole. Paragraph about the neurological disability out, and it would read, and that thing would read perfectly well. I'd go, I totally believe this guy believes that Jesus hugged him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that totally happens without that kind
need,
of explanation.
Yeah.
Though it is also true that there are people with neurological disabilities who the disability could be responsible for that stuff, but it's not at all necessary for that to be the case. And seems to me you should actually be cutting this kid some slack, since it, despite all of this, he identifies as an agnostic.
Right.
So I wouldn't be putting too much pressure on him. I mean, he's already aware that there is still room for doubt despite these sensations that he has had.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. That was a good one.
So what do you say, Russell?
I say it's about time for Shit.
Internetologists say.
Excellent.
Cool.
Yes.
Groovy.
What do we have this week?
I don't know. I shopped around a little bit. I want to properly credit the person who brought this to my attention. Jeez. Oh, yeah. It seems to be This Space for Rent on Twitter. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, This Space for Rent.
Yep. So in this article, which is at barbwire.com, which I'm checking the about page, politics and culture, news and opinion from a decidedly biblical worldview.
Okay.
Relativists beware, truth told here. And then a picture of a cross surrounded by barbed wire, in case you didn't get the metaphor. That's the about page.
Right.
This article is posted last week by one Dr. Sonny Hernandez, who have you got a bio
Dr.
down
Sonny.
Here? He is the director for Reforming America Ministries. Since 1997, he has served in the armed forces and is currently serving as a U.S. Air Force Reserve chaplain. So you know that he's going to speak to us with authority, and his topic is...
And no bias whatsoever.
Nope.
No.
Christian service members, avoid supporting or accommodating evil.
Okay, well.
And what does he think is evil?
Christians!
I think that's not bad advice in general, is that people shouldn't, shouldn't support or accommodate evil. But...
you got to identify it properly.
Yeah, evil's a pretty broad term, and there are different sets of things that people call evil. So what is he talking
about? What's his criteria?
Well, I hope that this will clarify, because he's a verse from Psalms right at the top that says, "Oh, you who love the Lord, hate evil." There you go. Now do you know more?
Okay. Now I'm not a big fan of evil myself, but again,
I'm not a big fan of loving the Lord, waiting for
the meat of this.
Christians in the armed forces who have their faith tested on many occasions will have their faith tested on many occasions. This is important, since Christians are commanded to examine themselves.
Your faith is going to be tested on many occasions, like this one, when I'm going to say a bunch of crazy bullshit, and you're going to have to keep on believing.
Have you got a problem with that, soldier? Since Christians are commanded to examine themselves, Corinthians.
Okay, well, we'll just...
I think maybe if you find anything, though, you really should go to a qualified medical professional.
Yeah. Navel gazing or point south, whichever, I know.
To see if they're professing Christianity is true or false and vitiated. Anybody got a handle on that word?
I'm vitiated?
V-I-T-I.
Vitiated.
Oh, man. I feel bad because I think I have a pretty good vocabulary.
Go on with your
Enlighten us. True Christianity produces a love for God, a hunger for his word, fervent prayer, devotion to a local Bible-believing church, and not a military chapel. What?
Okay, well, he's defined that there are Christians and then there are true Christians.
Yeah,
good.
And he's saying if you only go to a military chapel, you're not Christian enough? Is that what he's saying?
Have churches on base? I thought that was what chapels are for.
Isn't he a military chaplain?
Yes.
And isn't he just defined himself out of a job?
Well, he didn't say that chaplains are useless. I think he's just saying they're not enough.
Vitiate.
Yes.
Spoil or impair the quality or efficiency of.
Oh, okay. So it's either so your Christianity is true or it's false and vitiated.
Or destroy or impair the legal validity of.
Right.
So it's it's a negative. Right? It's a bad thing.
Okay.
Vitiate.
Yes.
Vitiate.
Ah, okay. Got it. Counterfeit Christians in the armed forces will appeal to the Constitution and not Christ. And they have no local church home, which means...
Whoa.
Yeah, that guy should be tossed out right now.
You think?
Yeah, abso-fucking-lutely.
Well, he says one and not the other.
Mm.
So he is not saying that... Yeah, he has not yet said that you got to put the Christ above the Constitution.
Yes.
And yes. That's what I'm taking away from it.
The Constitution.
But,
we haven't got there yet.
There's Christian bigotry right there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that,
big time.
That though there's a level on which I have to cut him some slack because, you know, mm-hmm. if you sign up for this thing – called Christianity, and you put idiots like this in charge of you,
mm-hmm.
and they start laying out the rules of what being a member in good standing consists
yeah, yeah.
of, you've kind of, you know, you've signed up for it. He has also not yet said that there's something wrong with non-Christians. He is talking about if you call yourself a Christian, you have to do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So far.
I think...
Okay. Mm. Though certainly we can criticize, you know, this crap that these poor people have signed themselves up for. Go on.
They have no local church home, which means they have no accountability for their souls. This is why so many professing Christian service members will say, "We support everyone's right to practice their faith, regardless if they worship a god different from ours, because the Constitution protects its right."
Now he's done it. Now he's crossed the line.
Yeah.
He said to be a member of that organization in good standing, you literally have to be a guy who rejects
the freedom of religion.
Yes, opposes freedom of religion. Yeah.
Right.
Christian service members who openly profess and support the rights of Muslims, Buddhists, and all other anti-Christian worldviews to practice their religion because the language in the Constitution permits are grossly in error and deceived.
And there we go. There's ding, 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 yep. ding. He has now placed the religion above the Constitution.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Where in the Bible do the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, or Christ himself support or accommodate anti-Christians to give adulation to their false gods or yield and obey anyone except the one true and living God?
Whoa, no, wait a minute.
I don't want to address this because I hate being put in the position of pointing at things in the Bible which say something nicer than actual Christian religious leaders
Big
say.
Big book of multiple choice, dude.
But okay. Yeah, yes. Dennis, why don't you go first? Because something hit you too. No?
There were many different gods worshipped in that era.
Oh, they're not going to go for that.
Did Jesus say, you can't worship any of those?
Yeah. Yeah, thou shalt not have any gods before me.
No, that's the Ten Commandments.
Well, but they're the same.
Jesus never said that.
Jesus, I'm here to fulfill the Old Testament and not to rewrite it. Yeah. However, the example I would bring up is the Good Samaritan story.
Uh-huh.
Aren't the Samaritans?
Not like those other Samaritans.
Though I guess that's not a really strong counterexample because I have no idea what religion they worship over there in Samarita. but if it was not Judaism,
mm-hmm.
then if they had their own religion and own gods over there, that would be a case of Jesus saying, hey, this guy doesn't believe like we believe, but he's an okay dude. Yeah.
And of course,
I hate having to pick, doing their job for them of picking and choosing the nice verses to make them sound nicer.
And, you know, Jesus was a Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And? What does that have to do with this?
I mean, he also presumably accept the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, which makes him a little egotistical.
Jews were wrong?
Assuming that Jesus even existed.
Yeah.
If there was a guy who was Jesus, he probably believed in himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He probably didn't think he was a figment of his own imagination.
Probably not.
So, I mean, by definition, he was... Jesus would have been a Christian.
I mean, unless he was posthumously awarded, attributed a whole bunch of quotes by, say, St. Paul, didn't really think any of that
did
stuff.
He reject,
sure, sure, sure.
Did he reject Judaism at any point?
No. But
no.
Judaism is like Judaism plus Jesus is Christianity.
Jews for Jesus. It's that whole thing.
Right.
So, okay.
Professing Christian service members must answer this important question. Do you appeal to the Holy Scripture or the U.S. Constitution ultimate standard to
what
measure your conduct?
He's just
do soldiers
go on
have
on
to
on
take
on.
An oath
to uphold,
to
the,
uphold
Constitution?
The Constitution?
Soldiers?
I don't think so. I know politicians. You
I
know,
think
like
it's
the president
I shall
stuff,
father
but...
no children and hold no lands.
But what do soldiers have to take an oath to?
No clue, and none of us have been in the military, so
we no, we have not.
Stuff.
We have several members who have been in the military. Maybe Peoples could speak to that sometime.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am the watcher on the wall.
Well, this asshole is telling them to, you know, violate their oath. What a turd.
But remember, he is not really a military chaplain. He is an Army Reserve chaplain.
Is that what it said?
Yeah.
Oh.
You read that Army Reserve, or
wait, he is currently serving as a U.S. Air Force Reserves chaplain. Yes. What does that mean? I don't even know enough.
Soldier oath. I underscore do solemnly swear or affirm.
Yeah.
So right there, they've pissed this guy off. That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. Not to God, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed. Oath of enlistment for the U.S. Army.
I wonder what this guy had to swear an oath to.
So,
I wonder what this turd had to swear an oath to.
There's a disclaimer at the bottom after his bio. You know, the opinions expressed here are solely his and do not necessarily represent the views of any government, military, or religious organization. He does not necessarily represent the military or the government in saying that the Constitution is should be overruled by Jesus. And he wrote this article as a civilian on his own time on an issue of public interest.
It says that in his disclaimer?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
If military – I'm skipping to
which
the
is
end
just
now.
Boilerplate to try to carve himself out some illegal defense if they come after him.
Yeah. I don't know level of leeway.
Do chaplains have to take that oath?
I have to assume they do.
Actually, that was the U.S. Army.
It says
oath.
He has served in the armed forces, but maybe his oath is now null.
Yeah, but I think I need to look for an Air Force oath.
Finally, I got out of that stupid oath.
Now I can say what I really think.
Yeah, now I can say the Constitution is crap and I wipe my
Air
ass with
Force
it every day.
Oath of enlistment. Here we go. Oath of enlistment.
I, your name.
It doesn't actually say it here. All I can find on Wikipedia is a bunch of rules about who can administer that oath.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore.
He goes on to say.
Yeah, I'm skipping down to the end. If military chaplains are criticized by individuals for not accommodating all service members and are told to resign from the military since they cannot care for all, I think he's tipping his hand a little too much. Just ask him this question.
Here's the Air Force oath. I state your name, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic,
pretty
that
much.
I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed me according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I see a thing here which says that officers take a slightly different oath. Mm.
Okay.
But I bet that thing about the Constitution, I bet that's boilerplate.
Yeah, but we're getting into something here that I don't know if it's personal, but he starts to really rant about chaplains being kicked out of the military.
Wow.
I do not know the context here
because
it's not part of his disclaimer.
And grindstones here.
But if they're told to resign from the military since they cannot care for all, just ask them this question. Does the free exercise of religion apply to all service members or only service members whose beliefs concur with yours? If the response is military chaplains must provide for all or they are not fit to serve, they are now guilty of violating their own criteria of providing for all, since they're establishing a religion that requires every service member to accommodate evil, even if their sincerely held convictions prohibit them from doing so.
God, what a whiny little bitch. Jeez.
I look forward to hearing about this guy getting kicked out.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he recently got kicked out and is bitching about that.
You're thinking?
Well,
are you on his website? I bet he posted about it if that happened.
However, if they respond to the question by saying that the free exercise of religion is for all, simply tell them, thank you very much. That's it. That's his punchline.
Wow.
That was his zinger at the end. I hope you sit back and appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm afraid the main thrust of that zinger was lost on me.
Mm.
Thank you, Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nasty. Nasty little piece of work there.
That's what we have creeping around within the military. Peter says, Jeff, I rarely find a case where we disagree with each other. In the most recent episode, during your own personal shit internet apologist say segment, reading the interview with that funny voice, you referred to their side as fucktards. The tards part, shorthand for retard, a word used to insult and disparage the mentally and physically ill. You're better than that, Jeff. Russell and Dennis deserve a mild rebuke for not calling you out on it. All of you guys are better than that. Well, Peter, you're right. Russell and Dennis do deserve a mild rebuke.
I accept your rebuke.
Right, rebuke it.
But,
rebuke us.
But more importantly, you're absolutely right.
He's right.
And I really think this is hugely important to go over this. Because there's a lot, there is a real effort being made in our society right now to not do stuff like this. And
right.
I have made a mistake. But it's hard for people to accept correction on things like this for a number of reasons. And I just want to go quickly through my mental gymnastics upon reading this letter, right? My very first unthinking emotional response was, hey, I didn't mean anything. That is not an argument, right? It's not about what it could be about what I meant if I really meant it, right? But even if I didn't mean it, keeping terms like this in circulation provides cover for the people who do mean it.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so, no, right. that is not a reaction. And then, you know, my brain goes desperately searching around for other justifications, other excuses, right? The whole, what is the world coming to if we're going to police language like this? You know what? We have a wonderful language full of all sorts of terms that are not disparaging of people with specific conditions. Right. And we can totally use those other terms instead. There is no need to justify this by saying, oh, well, it's entered the general lexicon and means, you know, doesn't mean that specific thing anymore. Doesn't matter. It is such an easy thing to move on to other language. And I apologize profusely for being a product of my upbringing and my culture. None of that is an excuse. I will continue to try to avoid using language like this in future.
And but I apologize for not saying anything.
Well,
because yes. I think I thought it.
It is, of course, slightly your fault.
It skated right through my head.
I will accept that.
Thank you, Peter.
Sorry about that.
Feel like I am like more aware than the average person on the street of like bigoted terms that are just casual language mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. But I also find myself sometimes grappling with getting in an argument over it or taking it a little too seriously when some person who is not in any way targeted by bigotry starts bitching about how political correctness is ruining everything. And I'm pretty sure there are some listeners right now who are sitting here going, I can't believe they're apologizing for this. You should be able to say whatever you want because free speech.
Yeah, we can say whatever we want, right? Nobody's going to go to prison for having used insensitive language. It is not about that. It is about, hey, it's not that big of a deal to move toward more sensitive use of language, and arguing about it is just you're providing cover for the continued insensitivity. You don't need to. Please don't.
Right. It's like to make an analogy to something I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with. If you have a Christian friend who jokes with you a lot about how you're a sinner or, you know, what evil have you committed this week? it's obnoxious. And even if this is the kind of relationship that you and your friend have, you're sort of – I mean there are people that we read about every week who are very seriously promoting the argument that atheists are just incapable of doing good things.
Yeah.
And your friend shouldn't go to jail for needling you about being a bad person because you don't believe in God. But that doesn't mean that's a good way to carry on.
Yeah, you totally be within your rights to call them on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's there's nothing wrong with standing up for yourself.
And then they will go through these same automatic, you know, culturally ingrained and
unless they double down.
Possibly having roots in genetics. I don't know. Even if they do, that's no excuse. But you can expect all people are, in my experience, just about all people get defensive if they are caught in a mistake and huffy and will try to cover for themselves and argue away. We can also be a little sensitive to that. But doesn't change a thing, right? Doesn't make it okay. All right. So thank you again, Peter, for your letter. Do we have more news? How are we doing on time? 12 minutes.
12 minutes. Oh, that's so long. what's going on? Huckabee, a teacher. Damn, all these Nibiru, posts. I'm gonna go for this thing that was written
eating
on
baby.
I'm gonna go for this thing that was written on SCOTUS blog, the Supreme Court. Man, I can't.
Oh, no.
This blog is pretty good in general, contributed to by a lot of different people, and I don't know what their exact – I mean they're called the Supreme Court of the United States blog, but they're not a .gov address. So forgive me if I can't recall exactly what relationship they have to this. But a guest writer named Mary Bonato, who is the Civil Rights Project Director at GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders, is writing about an ongoing case that is happening right now. The case of somebody v. somebody.
Is this the cakes thing?
Yes.
Is this more cakes thing. Cake news?
More cake news. This is cake news. You can disregard this news. It's cake.
Completely cake.
The frosting media is telling cake news again. So Mary, bringing up this case, which I'm sure she'll fill in some details on so I don't have to jump to another story to explain it.
Right.
Says, this case is not really about a cake. It is about equal citizenship of gay people and whether we may engage in the kinds of ordinary transactions others take for granted in the commercial marketplace and beyond. Will moral objections to who we are and whom we love be accorded constitutional supremacy over ordinary human decency? If you want to pull up a quick summary of this case in case she doesn't fill it in, then feel free.
I don't think I shall.
Go ahead. Okay. Will these objections justify closing the door on LGBT people and once again marking them, including the youth who had begun to hope they could live a full life, as outcasts and inviting further discrimination? To circumvent the demands of equality, both Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is the defendant here, right, and the Department of Justice as amicus, the opposing side, seek to draw new constitutional lines about speech in the marketplace, either as pure speech or expressive conduct, because of the personal creativity that can be involved in making products or for sale or providing services. A wedding cake is, quote, not an ordinary baked good. Its function is more communicative and artistic than utilitarian, the government writes. Oh, they were writing an amicus brief on behalf of Masterpiece Cake Shop.
Right.
So just to cut the suspense, I believe this is a case of a cake shop refusing to make a wedding cake for two dudes.
Right.
So the argument by the cake shop and by the Department of Justice writing on their behalf is that cakes are art and you can't compel people to make art for a cause that they find distasteful.
Yeah, that's
you can if you pay them to do it. If they accept payment.
Let me just go on a little personal thing here.
Sure.
I recently had a client who I'm an artist, right? Mm-hmm. I do freelance.
You would
art.
Know about this.
I had a client who asked me to draw a picture including drippy, gross, severed heads.
Uh-huh.
Which is not my thing.
Sure.
I don't do horror art particularly, and it was not looking forward to that. So I had a conversation with him and we went off in a different direction. He was cool with it. Had he not been willing to change his request, I might have declined the job.
Okay. But
yeah.
But this sounds like a case where you are unwilling to do something that is a specific type of art that
it's
is not your profession.
It's not because of who he is.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So if this guy
the art, apparently the art in this case is the little statuettes that, you know, there's supposed to be a guy and a lady. And if it's two guys, it's damaged the art.
Well, there's also, there's a lot that goes into making a wedding cake. Those things are complicated.
Sure.
Okay.
How
much of those things that go into making the wedding cake, I guess there's names on it maybe sometimes they do that.
Yeah.
Is it a choice of colors? Do gay people want different colored wedding cakes?
No, I don't think the issue at hand is that the gay cake was like significantly
it's not a gay cake. The cakes right. do not have
cake
gender.
For the gay.
I don't think the wedding cake was in any significant way artistically different from something that this right. person would have made for
well,
a straight couple.
Then in that case there's no argument. The only fundamental difference would be that it's two male figures if there's figures on it.
And you don't even need the figures from the same shop, right? I mean, you can just buy a couple of action figures if nothing else, right? I mean, the hard part is making the cake.
I would imagine that's been done.
I'm sure it has. I am There's now geek imagining, weddings all the time.
I'm now imagining a C-3PO and R2-D2 on top of a cake. sure, why not?
Marty and Doc.
Right. So anyway, I just wanted to bring up my example as sure there is. There, I think it's a valid principle of artists shouldn't have to be compelled to depict things they don't wanna.
Right.
But that is different from they shouldn't have to do the work for a client who is from a protected class.
Yeah. I mean, also. This is kind of a shoddy and maybe slippery slope prone argument because let's say that I'm like, a middle manager of a grocery store and I make one of those artsy displays that you know, I stack up a bunch of Coke cans in a fun way different colored cans so that they make an image. Can I then say that my job is art and now I get to pick and choose my clientele at the grocery store? I'm not saying that these cakes don't have an artistic component to them. I'm just saying cakes are kind of a commodity in a way. I don't know.
It's kind of a sneaky way.
Well, I don't think it – well – okay, the commodity thing may be an issue, but I I'm not a whole lot more comfortable with the government ruling on questions of art than I am with the government ruling on questions of religion.
Okay,
you know that is a tough, tricky one, and of course that's exactly why they want to go there. Right,
that's exactly why they made this particular argument.
Yeah.
But I feel like they are distracting from the subject because I think it's not about what they're doing with the cake. It's they don't approve of the purpose the cake will be used for.
Right. If the differences if the differences in the art are specifically those which have to do with the people who hired them to do it, that should be a red flag. I mean, if somebody came and just said, "I want we want for our wedding a bright orange wedding cake with black frosting,"
yeah.
Right.
Right.
And it's just, wow, that's just all Halloween-y and inappropriate. You could maybe say, look, I'm sorry, our shop does not want to be connected with making such a hideous wedding cake.
Yes.
Right?
You can go right now to cakerex.com.
Oh, yeah.
And see lots of hilarious bad cakes. And if somebody pulled up a picture from this blog and said, "I think this looks great. I want you to make me something exactly like that," they would be, "What the hell is this thing?"
Okay, that makes great radio. No, just you laughing at pictures.
Yes, just go there. Anyway, if you ask somebody to do a bad cake or something that they don't normally do because it's not part of their experience and knowledge as a cake artiste, then sure, you can suggest something else. But that's not really what happened here. This guy said, and I'm looking at the Wikipedia.
And that's the other thing. Uh-huh. You can suggest something else. In my case, I suggested to my client in a case where it really was about art and the content and not about the, I don't know, what it, this guy might have some kind of a peccadillo when it comes to severed heads. I don't know, but that's none of my business. But we worked it out. The cake shop could have said, you know what? We're just going to give it to you with a man and a woman on it because that's how we do our art. And then you can go ahead and like replace one of the figures if
but
you
they
want.
But they didn't.
But they didn't do that.
Yeah,
they didn't
what,
do that.
What they did, according to the Wikipedia page on Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission, was that the owner, Jack Phillips, a Christian, refused to bake the cake on the basis of it going against his religion. The cake. I mean, nobody was asking him to perform the ceremony.
Yeah, it's like making cakes is against your religion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And right there, if that is literally what he said, it's against my religion, that is not about the art.
Yeah.
That is about your religion.
That is what he said.
So there you go.
So we
have just hit our end of show.
Yeah.
I didn't even finish the end of that blog.
I would like to read one last thing from this page of my emails before we go. And that is from the Foundation Beyond Belief. They write, "We are pleased to announce that with your help, Foundation Beyond Belief will be dispersing initial grants of $65,000 to four organizations working on Hurricane Harvey recovery. We are still collecting funds for Harvey recovery at fbbgive.org." As we covered that last episode, and that's a little follow-up.
That's right.
Yeah, so we raised, I think, somewhere north of $3,500 in the end, and I think the board maybe has voted to release a little more, but
That's the ACA specifically.
Yes, the ACA.
Good for us.
Gave it directly to Foundation Beyond Belief, which runs Humanist Disaster Recovery. And if you want to continue contributing, because there have been a couple more hurricanes since then.
Yeah. And more.
No, Harvey was the Florida one, I believe.
Harvey, I thought that was the Houston one.
Okay. There have been multiple hurricanes.
Irma was the Florida one. And then there was another one. But anyway, check out Humanist Disaster Recovery. They're a good group.
Yeah.
All right. Dennis?
Well, that was their show. And they hope you enjoyed it. They'll be back with a show in 2 weeks on the 4th of October. Until then, they leave you with an I Am the Satellite by a Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fame except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people because you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky because there ain't nothing there.